Why can't I hear you? Why can't I hear you? Can you hear me? Okay, something's wrong. One second. Wait, you can hear me? Okay, why can't I hear you? Hold on.
No, it was my fault. Ted, you're muted, sir.
There we are. Okay.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, I thought I was going insane. I was like, no.
that might be true, but no, you're not. But you can. But it's my fault.
Okay, I thought I was going nuts. I was like, what the hell? Why can't I hear
it? Well, no, it's who knows with this thing.
Well, you are nuts, JT. You are. I mean, you for whatever reason decided to be my friend, so I don't really understand that how that works.
We both have that issue being insane. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us. You're watching Jamaal Thomas and Ted Rall. You're watching Deprogram. It is Thursday, June 11th, 2026. Please like, follow, and share the show. Little housekeeping. I'm going to be out for the TMI show this morning with Manila, but Robbie will be filling in. We will DMZ America podcast, also not happening this morning, but it is. We're attempting to schedule it for tomorrow at Friday at 11. Lot to talk about. I'm just going to go through the stories very quickly. If you have a question, comment, whatever, and you're watching live in the 9 o'clock hour Eastern, please go ahead and put your questions into the live chat on Rumble or YouTube, and producer Robbie West will get to them. Okay, so I have five main stories here. We could have had six. It was a busier news day than I expected. The Trump administration's policy of criminalizing criticism of Israel escalating dramatically. Eight people now face federal criminal charges for conspiring to threaten leaders of the University of Michigan into severing ties with Israel. We'll get into that. The anti-immigrant nativist riots that began in Belfast in British-occupied Northern Ireland are spreading into Scotland and to England proper. It's very disturbing. Basically, men in balaclavas are going door to door and demanding foreigners out. The Canadian government is introducing a new law that would make it so that no Canadian child under the age of 16 would be allowed to use social media sites. The U.S. appears to have deliberately targeted and destroyed a drinking water facility near the Strait of Hormuz in Iran, where temperatures are currently over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That is a war crime. I don't think it really much matters. And then, hilariously, the New York Times says hopes were fading that the Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which, among other things, permits domestic spying without a warrant on ordinary American citizens, is in danger of expiring. I'm like, not because Democrats are worried about the domestic surveillance that goes counter to our Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure, but because they're not happy about Tulsi Gabbard's chosen replacement as Director of National Intelligence. They don't think he has enough experience, which is probably true, but it's just a hilarious story. Jamal, any of that appeal?
I mean, the Belfast thing is a little disturbing. The EU thing is also, I'm sorry, the Canada thing is also interesting. This idea of banning social media users under the age of 16. I got to be honest, I'm agnostic on some of this. Let's go to FISA.
Okay, let's do it. We can dispose of FISA quickly.
Yeah. It should be disposed of quickly. Like, I'll just take
too late for that. Yeah.
It should be disposed of. It's outrageous. I mean, and in fact, it's a betrayal that the Trump administration wasn't more vigorous in getting rid of it, considering they used it to spy on Trump. If you remember, it's like they're wiretapping me. Okay, well, Trump is ancient. So he understands it in the context of a, quote, wiretap, as if there's a wire to tap. But what he's saying wasn't false. They were spying on his campaign. They were using FISA as a rationale to do so. They do peak on American usage of it when they're like, hey, who was he talking to? Well, he was obviously talking to an American. What was the American's name that they were talking to, which is often what they use? And there were cases of like agents using this stuff to spy on their wives and spouses and whatnot. This thing is massively out of whack. And one last point, the reconstruction that they use, meaning, hey, we have a case on somebody, but we can't really bring this into the limelight or into reality. And so what we do is we reach out to police force and tell the police force what we have so they can construct a parallel case against the person. Mind you, the cops wouldn't have had a case if it wasn't for the illegal spying that they were using for FISA. It is not a court. 99.7% of the cases brought to FISA, quote unquote, court, it gets allowed to pass through because there is no opposition to what is being told to the judge. All of this is like the Stasi in the US. And we pretend as if it's not like the Stasi. It's insane that they allowed this to go through. I'm sorry, yeah, it should fail. It should die.
Yeah, it's like a star chamber, right? To use another reference. It's totally true. There's, basically what these are freelance federal judges earning a little scratch on the side. They meet in private chambers. Prosecutors come in. The government FBI comes in and said, hey, we want to spy on Jamal Thomas. Here's what we have on him. They can make things up, and there's not certainly your defense lawyer isn't there. You're never notified. And they don't even have a pro forma person who's there to defend sort of generically to fight against this. There's no one there, like you said. And so the judges are very predisposed to granting these because they're establishmentarian, and also they're financially induced to do this, right? Because let's just say you had a FISA judge who was routinely turning down these wiretapping warrants. Well, they would stop using that judge, right? And then they're not going to be able to make their vacation home payments. So it's corrupt. So, I mean, I think it's hilarious that even the New York Times, right, which claims to be, you know, the paper that broke the Snowden revelations, that claim to be upset about Nixon wiretapping during Watergate and all that, that they are totally, and they've had their own reporters targeted under FISA, that they're saying hopes are fading. And the government says it's, you know, this is how we catch terrorists. There is no evidence whatsoever that any terrorist has ever been caught by doing anything under FISA. And if that evidence exists, I'd like to hear it. But even if it worked, efficacy is not just justification. But I don't even think you can point to efficacy. Like, you know, the idea is kind of like, well, we're bending the law a little bit to keep America safe. I don't think we're any safer. I'm much more scared of the government than I am scared of Islamic terrorists.
Yeah, if we have a legal system, what is the point of that legal system if it's not, like, meaning, we used to champion this idea that we don't have Stasis. We don't have those. We don't have these secret police in the way
that we do.
We don't have secret courts. Yes, we do.
And Jamal, let me give you one low and fat over home plate that you can smack out of the park. what good are the Democrats if this is what passes for opposition? The only thing they're worried about is personnel, right? They're worried that the relatively weak position of DNI, which Tulsi Gabbard found frustrating and kind of worthless, is basically being filled by a dude who's probably underqualified. Okay, how about this is an opportunity for the Democrats, another one that they're blowing, where they could say, we're going to take a stand for the American people who don't like this. When the American people learn about this, left, right, middle, they don't like it. So, I think FISA, if it were put up for a vote on every, if you woke up in the morning and you had a poll on your phone, it would go down 94% to 6%,
They don't care. I am not of mind that Democrats care. Sure. No. But there are like 10 things that I can think of that would be popular, that the American public would agree with, mm-hmm. that you would think that they could go to the bat for, but they would never do it. They don't believe in that stuff. From their point of view, FISA is a necessity. It's something that they want to be able to use because governments don't tend to want to give up power. The Democratic Party, who believes they will be back in government at some point in the future, also want to be able to use these tools and instruments to F over the American public. So I don't think they care. And when you have both political parties that have conspired with each other to not care on a particular issue, then that issue becomes almost untouchable. Yeah. It's this kind of argument that we make where it's like, the things that people want are things that both political parties have basically agreed that they're not going to get, in which case they never come up, which means you don't have a choice on that issue. You can choose Pepsi and Coke. You can't choose whether or not the government spies on you, which is outrageous. Yeah, and by the way, the moment that you would try to do something like that, there will be political actors trying to stop you from doing it. And it's like, so me as representative of the American public trying to change something will get stopped in my pursuit of trying to change it, despite the fact that the American public fundamentally agrees with me on the issue that it needs to be changed. It's
disgusting. All right, so what shall we hit next? Shall we do Iran?
Yes, the strikes going back and forth. Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz. They've effectively mm-hmm. said this is closed. The U.S. ran strikes yesterday. Iran retaliated. Apparently there were 16 strikes against the base in Jordan. I don't remember if they hit Bahrain again this time around. Apparently there were attacks on Iraq yesterday at some point. This is a war. I mean, from my point of view, the war never stopped. And from my point of view, Iran should have never stopped firing. It's not about tit for tat. It's not about allowing the U.S. to reorganize itself. One of the things that Iran, at least I hope they learned, was that the biggest defender of the U.S. was the mystique of the U.S. that powers the shadow on the wall. And that those bases in the Middle East, the biggest protection that they had was that it was the U.S. and nobody would dare attack the U.S. The moment that Iran got pretty familiar, it's like, ooh, I like this. This is our tag in the bases, right? Going after the ships. Apparently, they hit one of the U.S. Warships. I guess the interesting thing to me is that Iran probably should have never stopped attacking initially because they were still technically at a war. Meaning, don't let the U.S. be the determining factor of when a ceasefire is in play or not, because the U.S. is just going to use a ceasefire to enact war by other means. This is true in Lebanon. This is true in Gaza. And this is true in the context of Iran. I understand what they were doing. They wanted tit for tat, where if you leave us alone, the war ends. The U.S. wants you to stop breathing. They want you to not exist as a political entity. They're not going to stop.
Well, by the way, I should mention that the Iranians yesterday said that they consider the ceasefire to be meaningless at this point, the one that was struck back in April. And obviously, that's true. I'm going to push back a little bit on your assertion that they should, that they need to ignore the U.S. moves towards a ceasefire. I mean, a big part of Iranian culture is reasonableness. They have a domestic audience to play to. They like to be, the government likes to say, listen, we're not looking for a fight. you start it, we'll finish it, but we're not going to start it. And they also have this uncomfortable position of being the only significant Shia majority country in the Middle East. And man, they sure could use some support from someone other than the Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas. And they're not getting it, obviously, quite the contrary. But they've got to play to the Arab street. And part of that, you know, it's a little harder when they're Sunnis. I mean, sorry, Shias. So I think that, you know, they need to come off as sort of like, what you kind of want the average Egyptian to say, like, is like, well, you know, the Iranians, they're doing everything they can. And these fucking Americans and the Israelis are crazy and they're assholes and they're blowing up schoolgirls. And now they took out a water plant and they're shitheads. And, you know, you don't want it to be like a pox on both of their houses.
The average Egyptian didn't do anything when Israel was doing a genocide and the Egyptian government sat on its hands and did nothing. The average Syrian did nothing at the same time. The average Saudi did nothing. You can't do mass protests? No, even a dictator cares a little bit about what the public cares about.
Just to be clear, so a few things to deal with the pushback. Reasonableness is not reasonableness when it is considered weakness and it is preyed upon as a weakness. Meaning if you're being reasonable and I'm not, and I'm looking at everything that you're doing effectively as weakness, you invite attacks. You invite me to be more aggressive.
Oh, I agree.
It edges me on because I think from my point of view, the reason that they're not behaving in a particular way that I think they should behave is because they're just weak and we can expand. When they put in True Promise 1 and 2, what did the Israelis in the U.S. do? The Israelis looked at it and says, this is theatrical. They're doing this because they can't attack us. They can't defend themselves. Obviously, people like me were saying that's nonsense. Just because they don't want a war doesn't necessarily mean that they can't fight a war. They just don't want a war. Most people don't want to fight wars, right? Most people want to be left to their devices, especially when you have this predatory nation that is roaming through the Middle East, taking down governments left and right. So I get it, right? I appreciate their pragmatism. Same thing with the Russians, but it invites attacks when people are looking at your pragmatism as weakness. It demands for you to be reasonable, to be far more aggressive than you may be comfortable with doing.
But well, that's the downside is when you're dealing with a fucking rabid dog, the dog will keep attacking. But you know, that's also kind of, you know, it's kind of like the civil rights movement tactic of not resisting while the sheriff's, you know, mean dogs are biting you on the bridge, right?
But this is different because the civil rights movement didn't have the power to have an aggressive, muscular response. Iran does. They demonstrate.
Yeah. By the way, hilariously, I should mention that on Truth Social and on X, the White House and all of the MAGA allies are going around saying that Iran has, the Strait of Hormuz is open. Iran has been completely defeated. Has no military left whatsoever. Mark Levin, whatever his name is saying that, you know, that the U.S. is triumphant. Trump is triumphant. I'm like, okay, of course, obviously, you guys know you're lying, but I mean, how stupid do you think we are? I mean, we're pretty stupid, but we're not that stupid.
You'd be surprised. I think you'd be surprised. I mean, I think that too. But I've seen Trump supporters be like, well, Trump is fighting for America because we can't allow Iran to get weapons. And I think, I'm like, you fucking idiots.
Yeah. Well, Iran doesn't want nuclear weapons. So it's like, it's sort of like, I don't know. It's like you're pushing, like, you know, we will force France to start serving croissants in their restaurants. They already serve croissants in their restaurants. Yeah.
But, and by the way, I just want to make another point. The population of Iran is already radicalized at this point. Oh, yeah. We attack them in the middle of negotiations. We attack them in a war of aggression. And the wild part about it is
we assassinated their supreme leader.
We assassinated their supreme leader, not to mention Soleimani. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a population that didn't live through the Iranian revolution, that was.
And did not care for the government.
And did not care for the government is now radicalized.
True, correct.
I would be radicalized. I don't even live there.
Me too.
I'd be radicalized, right?
Totally.
Another point. All of those Gulf states have just been attacked by Iran. Meaning, this idea that Iran is going to get friends in this is nonsense. The reality of it is, all of those bases, all of those governments are vassals of the United States. The majority of the populations hate Israel for the genocide that they've committed. And yet, the leadership of those governments will say F off to its own population and still want to work with Israel and still want to work with the US. This is not about the populations. They've already won over the populations by standing in opposition to Israel and the United States. They've won hearts and minds. They've already done it. I'm
True.
saying that Iran, I'm trying to make the argument that this is not about reasonableness. This is not
Right.
about trying to win friends. This is about preserving the integrity of the state and what
I
is
think that
necessary
the
to do
Iranian
so.
government is on your is on the same wavelength as you are now. I think they've received the memo. I think they've read it, they understand it, they agree with
Yeah.
it. Yeah.
Hard
We have a
lines.
bunch of comments. Let's dispose of those comments and then we'll read an ad and then be during that well during the ad people can put more comments if they're so inclined. Insight Vector, thanks for the dollar. I don't think you consider riots. You can consider riots in unionist areas of North and East Belfast nativist by definition. They are British, not Irish. Remember, unionists burned nationalists out of houses in 1969. But it's nativist in that
Interesting.
you're targeting foreigners. In fact, it's not even really, there's a racial component, but a big one, but it's not even exclusively anti-people of color violence. Ukrainians and other white foreigners are being targeted and expelled from their homes as well. So I don't know. I mean, if that's not nativist, I don't know what the right word is.
That is literally nativist. I mean, that's not even like a white issue. If they're doing that to, if they're telling Ukrainians to leave, that's
Yeah,
a
it's like
we
foreigners
want.
out, not,
Yeah.
black people out or something else. I mean, I don't
No.
know. John D. Cockefeller, thanks for the $2. This question is for you, JT. Unrelated to current topics, you're very open about your love of the Star Trek universe. Well, open, like it's not like something to be closeted about. Are there other fictional universes you are part of the fandom of? Dungeons and
Yeah.
Dragons, I don't know what Lot R is, etc. Or Lord of the Rings.
The Expanse universe is amazing. The books are fantastic. The books are fantastic. I fell in love with the characters in that. In fact, the TV show and the books are very similar. And so, in the same way, like if you're looking at Dune, Dune is another one. Frank Herbert is a god. He's a living god. The man is astonishing. The way he writes his books, the prose, it is just breathtaking. It's so good. And Three Body and Dune are radically different books. Like one is so character driven, and the way that the characters think is like political philosophy throughout the book. Three Body is scientific triumphalism in a way that is makes science almost mystical. It's very phenomenal. Yeah, I'm a sucker for this stuff. I am a sucker for it.
All right, let's see. I think there's one more paid one. Manchild, thanks for the $2. All hail our commander in queef, bringer of death, destroyer of worlds.
Destroyer of worlds, the bringer of rain, the bringer of rain. Yeah, God Emperor Trump. Who is failing miserably. Look, he is hastening decline. Like, I would tell you, as a rule in chess, you can't do what you don't have the material conditions to do. Meaning, it's one thing for you to have ideas. Ideas are nice. It's another thing for you to have the material capability to accomplish those ideas. And when you are doing that and you don't have the ability, you fail. You fail. There's a breakdown somewhere. It just doesn't work. The logistics just don't pan out. The same thing is true in real life. And I think we're finding that out the hard way with a president that can't seem to just. Because if he's making that argument, and if all of them are making an argument, then they should just leave. They say, we won, we're out, we're done.
Yeah,
They're beaten to
someone
death.
counted the number of times that Trump has said that peace was right around the
38.
corner. Yeah, and counting. I mean, by the day, right?
Yes.
Did we talk? Sean Pat wants to know about the tweet claiming that the Apache helicopter was escorting tankers through the Strait of Hormuz when it was downed, or that Trump was on some kind of secret oil mission to get, like, we got a bunch of oil that nobody knows about because we're all a bunch of tards. If only the U.S. government had access to media and was able, through, like, let's say, an Oval Office speech, to show us things and talk to us about things, then we might know them. But I guess they don't have that ability. They should. Trump should get a podcast. Then he'd be able to talk to people. It's just so ridiculous. I mean, their narrative. I mean, their war. I didn't have Trump derangement syndrome. I don't think I do now. But I think that, like, you know, the Democrats were right when they said that basically Trump has declared war on truth itself. And it's in even the idea of truth as some sort of objective standard that we're supposed to care about. I mean, I don't know if that's his intent or not, but that's the practical effect of this communication style of just saying whatever, whenever, and just basically it's like, go away, shut up. It's crazy.
It's an escalation from Romney. Somewhere along the way, they realize truth doesn't matter in political space. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's actually brilliant. It's true.
I mean, if you remember, Mitt Romney would say anything. He just didn't care. And even then, though, it was kind of like, okay, he's lying through his teeth. Paul Ryan was the same way. And I remember Joe Biden in a debate with Paul Ryan laughing all throughout the debate. And people were like, why is Joe Biden laughing? He's laughing because he knows he's lying, right? Like, it's almost like Joe Biden is like in on the joke. I've done politics for a very long time, son. And this guy's lying through his teeth. And this is absolutely hilarious to me because I know that he's lying through his teeth. And people were like, why is Joe Biden laughing all the way through? I'm saying it's an evolution. When you get Trump just didn't seem to care about the truth. It just seems to, like, not matter. And even when you know it's a lie, he just does it anyway. It's like you're standing in the middle of the rain. It's like, it's a beautiful day out here. Look at the sun is shining. You're like, do you just not care? I have the biggest crowds in the history of crowds. Do you? I'm the greatest president ever. I did more for this country than anybody.
Really? I stopped all the wars.
I stopped all the wars. I've stopped 8 wars. They've been fighting for 3,000 years. And it's like, it's objectively false and false in a way that is obviously false. I mean, even the WMD stuff, he didn't even do all the rigmarole that Bush did.
No.
Where Bush was like, well, I want you to stop and we're going to try to get a deal and we're going to do all of this and we take all of this time and the Brits get involved and the French don't want to do it and blah, blah, blah. He didn't even do that. Right? Like, it's weird. And I don't know if this is a new norm.
It is. It's never going back. If Democrats ever come back to power, they're going to keep doing the same thing. I mean, look, Lord knows they were gaslighting us throughout the Biden years. Yes. About a lot of things, not just the president's state of mind, you know, or whether a genocide was going on in Gaza or whatever. Yes. So much bullshit. I think once a society goes down that path, once you find out that something works, it's sort of like, you know, you get the Graham Plattner effect. Well, you know, Republicans don't give a shit about stuff like, you know, he's ass grabby. You know, their candidates are ass grabby and, you know, rapey and whatever. So, you know, or Nazi-ish. We don't care. So, you know, like, so why should we care? And it's a reasonable response. You know, it's sort of like the, you know, like we talked about Iran. Like, well, the U.S. is mean and violent and, you know, they don't honor ceasefires. Why the fuck should the Iranians? You know, it's like, I get it completely. Like, the other side, you know, it reminds me of, I was a campaign manager for my old homeroom teacher who ran for state rep. And I dug up a bunch of shit about her incumbent opponent. All true, though. And she was like, I feel very uncomfortable about bringing this up. It's like dirty.
What, opposition research?
Opposition research. She was running for state rep. She didn't want to, she just felt bad. She was like, it's mean. And I was like, I tell you what, at the debate on community access cable, if he lies, then you'll have the folder there and you promise to use it. But if he doesn't lie about you, if he tells the truth about you, then don't use it. And she was like, okay, deal. And of course, you and I both, you know what happened. Of course he lied about her. And of course she used it and she won. So the point is, like, you know, it's like politics ain't beanbag, right? But I mean, it's also, I'm worried less about the political space than about, like, sort of the way that the information space has been completely, like, flooded. For example, you know, we've already seen when MAGA world, more effectively than the Democrats, when they get a talking point, literally it goes out, obviously via email or Telegram or whatever, it goes out to all of those functionaries. And then you start to see that messaging crop up on X and other platforms. Like, over the next few days and weeks, almost verbatim, but adjusted a little bit. For example, right now, I mean, you can't get away from, like, look how awesome the reflecting pool is. Like, that's all the right wingers are saying right now. And it's kind of like, and it's just like, what's demoralizing about this is that you're like, can we talk about something else? And the answer is you can't, because they've flooded the space. So you have the choice of either checking out and being like, I'm just not going to engage with these people, in which case they own it. Or, you know, you're basically like the, you know, the Greek general who was ordered his troops to whip the waves so that they would stop. And you're wasting your fucking time. I mean, you know, you can't. So, you know, you're just basically, it's a no-win situation. And it's just so toxic.
We should also be very clear that just because we move in a particular direction, that it doesn't mean it's progression. Like, meaning just because something, a turn is taken, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily progression. And what I mean by that is this stuff is cancerous. Like, it requires a clear sense of reality to deal with reality. Like, I don't want to get eaten by a bear. I don't want to fall off of a cliff. I don't want to go down a pathway that leads me into a desert where I die of thirst. It matters that I can see clearly about what's ahead of me and what I'm doing. And that's doubly so if you're talking about a life or something that acts and functions like a life, such as a society. I find this to be cancerous. The idea, like during the war, where Obama was doing the surge, one of the things that came out in the Washington Post during its, or let's say during the military assessment, was that you could never really get a clear sense of a war because Obama was gaming the numbers to such a degree that nobody really knew what was actually taking place in real terms. And that's the way the White House wanted it, because it wasn't going well, right? And the same thing is true with this. These guys are out there screaming that they've won a war while the strait is closed and Iran effectively owns it, which is a new reality that didn't exist before Trump got involved.
Well, actually, okay. I would argue that it was always the reality, but the Iranians left it open. That's all.
True. They left it open, meaning it's kind of like, as long as you don't touch it, we don't touch it.
Right.
The moment that you affect us, we're going to exert.
This was definitely something that the Iranian, planners were like, in case of emergency, break glass.
Break glass. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my feeling, though, or sense is a country cannot continuously lie to itself and deal with real world phenomena as it's lying to itself. And that stuff is not.
For example, are we ever going to get to host the World Cup again? No.
I hope
because,
not.
Because we're doing a shit job and the American people don't even know it. They don't know that three countries' teams have been illegally turned away from the US border. They don't know that, you know, how bad it is. You know, they hear a few little, you know, tidbits. Oh, it's expensive, but it's more than that. We have a few more questions and I got to read this ad and then we got to move on. Frank Friel, thanks so much for the $5. The Epstein tyrants want to be gods of their worlds. Gods don't see themselves as equal to mere mortals. The Epstein tyrants will never stop. There was a time when I would have thought that was overblown rhetoric, but not anymore. Not for me.
They'll stop. It'll be mechanical. I just don't think we can keep this up. I don't think a society can have be riddled with this many complexities and not really addressing any of them. And just
it's a society that's incapable of addressing its problems, right? The Colorado River doesn't have water. The climate change is out of control. It's going to be effectively 100 degrees there in Washington and New York today. It's been hot before, but it's like this is going to be a blazing hot summer because of climate change. Yeah, we can't even consider a problem and even say, oh, okay, well, it is a problem, but we're not going to do anything about it. We're not even getting to that point. It's just like we don't even discuss it. So it's like it doesn't exist. Bilius Fab, thanks for the dollar. Post-truth, he says, is a term to divert blame for the bourgeoisie's postmodernism on the plebs. I like that. I like that a lot. Postmodernism, nothing really means anything. Words are all arbitrary, which, of course, words are arbitrary, but that's not what, Derrida had in mind. Let me read this ad, and then we'll do some more. I'm sorry, we just have to move so fast. We have so much to do. We hear a lot about crypto, but here's the part most people miss. Crypto was created so you could actually own and control your money. After the 2008 financial crisis, Bitcoin was designed as an alternative to banks. So instead of a bank holding your money, delaying transfers, or limiting access, you're in control. And if you've ever had to wait for a transfer to clear, you felt that problem. Now fast forward to today. Everyone's heard of crypto, but getting started still feels complicated. That's why we use Rumble Wallet. It takes all that complexity and makes it simple. Choose what you want, Bitcoin, dollar-backed stablecoins, or even digital gold backed by real gold. No complicated setup. It connects with MoonPay, so you can use your credit card, debit card, or bank and be up and running in minutes. Once you're set up, you can even support your favorite Rumble creators like us directly. So do this now. Scan the QR code or click the link in the description and download Rumble Wallet. From there, you can set up your wallet, tap buy, and you're in the game. In just a few minutes, you can go from hearing about crypto to actually owning some. Okay, JT, let's talk about this anti-Zionism thing. So University of Michigan, 8 people, mostly with Muslim-sounding last names, have all been charged in a federal court in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan, which is kind of like covers Detroit and that section of Michigan. University of Michigan at Ann Arbor is west, if memory serves, just west of Detroit. And they're accusing pro-Palestinian activists of basically committing a bunch of crimes that boil down to conspiracy to transmit threats, witness intimidation, and destruction of property to prevent seizure. I've read not the complaint, but I've read the summary of the complaint. It's very chilling. I mean, we can argue about whether these protesters went too far. They went to the president and the provost's house and other university officials and did some pranky things like glued their door shut, put pictures of dead babies on their lawn, basically harassed them at home. And right. To be clear, I don't approve of, trespassing or fucking with people in their homes. It's extremely disturbing, no matter what their politics are. I think it's like not cool. And not to mention, it could lead to a tragedy if someone decides to exercise their Second Amendment rights, in a situation like that. But that said, this looks like an overcharge because this isn't like a RICO case. I mean, it's not a conspiracy in the sense that of the way RICO was originally intended to go after, a vast ranging ongoing criminal enterprise. This would be more like anybody who plots and schemes on a Telegram chat to go and fuck with someone could theoretically under this law, under this doctrine, be charged with criminal conspiracy and sent to federal prison for years. They may get their convictions, but at a very high cost to, First Amendment rights. I do think you can charge these people with vandalism and trespass under local law, totally. But, it's like, that's not the same thing.
Once again, we're at this make Israel great again with a president that seems to be hell-bent on destroying any notion of norms, of legalities, in order to defend Israel. That's effectively what this is. It's one thing if you said vandalism, even that I think would be an upcharge. Protests, in the way that they're protesting, yeah, it's aggressive, but they're not hurting anybody, at least not in the way that it's been explained. A RICO charge, RICO was supposed to be used for the mafia. And just like other laws that are not used for the purpose that they're supposed to be used for and instead are refashioned in order to accomplish some objective by a particular administration, that's what this is being used for. The idea of you using RICO for this is outrageous. As you point out, if you want to say that they were being vandals, okay. I guess my question would be, where should they direct their protests? If not directly, these guys are committing, are backing, for all intents and purposes, genocide, which is the way that they look at it, which from their point of view justifies somewhat of an aggressive response to the fact that the university won't disconnect itself from the murder of women and children on a massive effing level. I want to spell it out just so we're clear on what we're talking about. The same country that the administration is affiliated with has just been added to the rape list because they keep systemically raping other human beings, men and women. And I don't even want to get to the kids part. I hope you get my point. I'm trying to make it stark to highlight why they're doing what they're doing. Is it against the law in some cases like vandal? Yes. But is breaking the law in the context of protests as American as apple pie? I would also say that is also yes. I guess my thing is, where should they protest? If Marco Rubio, who is strangling Cuba, who is no issue murdering kids in Gaza and backing the genocide, is able to sleep soundly in his bed, is that a positive development?
I mean, those are fair questions, right? I mean, like if it was 1942, and you had, members of the German Bund who were, Americans who were allied with Hitler, who were supporting, the Holocaust. And, should they be free to sleep peacefully in their beds without people yelling outside their door or lobbing rocks through their windows? Probably not. But at the same time, I mean, the law is still the law. And, in America, you are protected from someone trespassing onto your property or breaking your shit, no matter how much of an asshole you are. Are these people assholes, who were victimized here? Yeah, they were assholes. And they should have been. And like, I guess this is like one of those things where I would say a prosecution might be appropriate by the state, but it should be more of a slap on the wrist, right? Like, we're going to send you, it's going to be 6 months community service. It's going to be, 7 days in the lockup. It's going to be a $1,000 fine. We're going to send you a message. We don't approve of this, but we're also not sending you to prison for years. Because we know this is like kind of within the realm of protest. So the state doesn't have to approve of protest. Right. Or sanction it, but the state should be measured when it.
If I'm on the jury, they're going home.
Oh, me too. I mean, to me, well, this is an example to me of an overcharge, right? I mean, they went too far. I mean, what they, basically, this is like, I mean, these protesters went a little too far, and the state is going way too far. And
I'm saying, if I'm on the jury for anything that they're bringing for, they're going home, meaning there's no charge that they can be, that if I'm sitting on the jury, that I'm going to accept. My answer is going to be innocent. I don't care what they did. I don't care what is there. Any state can make a law that is in the interest of the people who are committing crimes. They can do it in a heartbeat, meaning it's one thing for a state to say, okay, the state is doing things that is wrong. The Biden administration fully understood that Israel was starving the population. The Trump administration even went to the Human Rights Court in Europe to basically make the argument that they had the right to do so. We have laws to say that we are not going to work with or give military aid to countries that are starving their populations. The Biden administration ignored it in order to continue to give aid to Israel. We pick and choose. I'm saying that's outrageous. And I'm saying if people are pushing back against a government that is effectively using their laws to protect themselves against crimes, then
I get it. And like, there's a strong, I would certainly consider jury nullification if I found myself on that jury also. But I got to tell you, I've had people, New York firefighters come to my home and break down my door over a cartoon that I drew. It was fucking terrifying.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they use the axe, you know, to break down the front door of the building.
Are you serious?
I mean, and it only stopped because I called up my friend, who really was brilliant, and he turned out to be an asshole, but I miss him. I wouldn't go be his friend again, but I miss him because of things like this. He goes, "I'll be right over." I'm like, "What are you going to do? There's like 15 bruisers here with like, you know, any one of whom can kick my ass six ways till Sunday." He's like, "I'll take care of it." He comes over. He was a media photographer with his giant camera and just starts taking pictures of them and their equipment and everything. And they're like, "Who?" And they're just like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Oh, you're going to be on the front page of the New York Times. Smile." And they all just ran.
What was the cartoon? You got to tell me about this cartoon.
It was about in the days after 9/11, people were donating millions of dollars to the New York City Fire Department. And right. I thought it was hilarious because it was like, the fire department is publicly funded by the taxpayer. Right. I mean, they don't need your money, right? So I did a cartoon about like how they had so much money coming in that they were piling it up in the corner of the firehouses and it was itself causing a fire hazard. That's it. That's all. Yeah.
And they axed your door for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess they really wanted that money to keep coming in. So
that means they were doing something with that money they had no business doing.
Oh,
if you're sure that strongly to it.
Oh, they were pissed. Yeah, they were really angry. So but
certainly people.
And they came in a red fire truck, which, you know, I used to be a little boy. There was a time I would have found that very exciting that the big red truck was coming to my house, but not that time.
And they used the axe on your door.
The entire building. I mean, you know, it's like I wasn't the only person who lived there. There were like, I don't know, 60, 80 people lived there.
All assholes. I would say is that there is a gradient. Everything is a gradient.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning even personality, right? From 0 to let's say 100, and there's some number in between. Rational people can look at something and come to scale, at least from my point of view. Meaning it's one thing for a government to be doing a genocide. It's another thing for you to write cartoon. Coming to your house to kick down your door for a cartoon is pretty outrageous.
Well, they wanted to kill me, I think.
I hope you get my point. I get your point that people can see things in particular ways and people can act out in particular ways in protests. I'm saying
that's it.
Them kicking down your door is outrageous. That's just a crime.
I mean, I don't want them to be able to, if I had been able to prosecute them, I don't want to be able for them to defend themselves and say, well, things just got a little spicy, but we're just protesting. I mean, it's not cool, you know, to come and protest the country
and what the country is doing. I'm saying there's a radical difference. Those firemen were out of their minds.
But you can't codify that in the law.
True. You know? True.
So, it's impossible to define these things. So let's see. We got some more comments here.
I can't believe you did John, that. That's outrageous.
Oh, yeah. John D. Cockefeller. By the way, some people say they want to see the cartoon. I'll dig that up. Anti-Semitism laws curtailing U.S. free speech laws were promised to Israel 3,000 years ago. Hilarious. Thanks very much for that dollar. Okay, we should talk about maybe the Canadians, right?
Yes.
That's not a long story, but I think it's worth noting. So basically, Australia already did this. So I guess this is spreading through the British Commonwealth, to this idea of making it hard or impossible for kids under 16 to use social media sites like TikTok and Facebook. I mean, I think we all understand the motivation here, right? Is this reasonable? I mean, you know, I think it's like if everyone's banned, there won't be that social pressure. I mean, you could still be like, well, we're all banned. We, you know, I guess we have to go outside and play ball or something, read a book, watch TV. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think I have a big problem with this. But I don't like censorship, so I'm kind of torn.
I take issue with this. I mean, like, the argument that the state, this is overreach. And By the way, they're doing something similar in Britain, where they're like, people need to sign up to porn sites. And it's like, right.
So Texas has a similar law where you have to. I mean, who's going to look at porn if you have to upload your driver's license and everything to admit that you subscribe to teenytinytitties.com? You know, you're not going to do that.
It's a level of social control. And it's like, what is the point? So you're saying you don't want kids on social media. Okay, does this have anything to do with the fact that Israel is murdering people en masse? And that when people are going on TikTok, Twitter, the youth look at this with a certain, you know, they frown upon the fact that you've been murdering women and children. Does that have anything to do with it? I don't think it's coincidence that both of these things are happening simultaneously. And the younger generation hate Israel because they're fucking psychopaths, maniacs, and rapists. Like, meaning, if you're looking at mainstream media and Barry Weiss taking over various functions of like CBS.
Who, by the way, is apparently she's now being reported that she's going to take over news editing at CNN as well.
That's not random. That's not random. Even the social media thing, the TikTok issue in the United States. Again, it wasn't random. You had a lot of people being able to see exactly what Israel was doing on its face and see them dancing around as they were doing it. There were videos of them behind heavy machine guns, murdering people, trying to get food. These are the psychopaths that effectively people can see for their own eyes. People like me don't have to just tell you. You can watch the videos. And people were watching the videos on TikTok, on Twitter, etc. Hence, you seemingly getting legislation out of some of these countries that seem to be ostensibly under control of, let's say, a particular Zionist ideology that wants to corral and curtail the ability for people to be able to see that content. Now, they could say, well, we're just doing this for kids because we love kids so much. I don't think these people care about their populations at all, but being bluntly honest with you, whether it's in the US, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in Canada, I suspect the laws are coming in as a direct result of issues of control, not issues of safety. There's a difference in those things.
I mean, you know, I have to admit, I never thought about it that way, but you've given me a lot to think about.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I will consider it and think about it and run it in the background of my little brain. And we'll talk. I know we're going to be talking about this in the future.
And by the way, real quick, even if you take out the Zionist element of it, control is the issue. In the old days, they used to have, what, 3 news channels? And for all intents and purposes, all of that stuff was correlated at times in relationship with a government, whatever that government was. And now you have social media where that stuff is bifurcated. And you have people, especially when they're young, that can look at all sorts of information. All of these things make it difficult for a state to control a narrative. This is about control. This is not about freedom or safety of kids. They don't care about safety of kids.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to agree that does seem unlikely, given that they don't care enough about kids to keep class sizes low, pay teachers properly, update schools, keep schools safe, etc. They don't care about kids. And I mean, you know, the mere fact that they want to try kids as adults for crimes, they don't care about kids. Let's talk about the race riots, or I should say the nativist riots in Northern Ireland and the UK, including Scotland. The main takeaway is kind of like, what we were talking about yesterday. It looks like this is a lot about, it's about resentment, about people who are from Belfast and these other places who are having a hard time economically, you know, no jobs or shit jobs. Not enough money, no hopes, and they're basically pissed off that foreigners are coming in and competing with them for work. And obviously, there's obviously xenophobia and racism, you know, mixed into this toxic brew. But, this is very concerning, especially when it seems to be methodical, where you have balaclava masked goons going door to door and saying, like, foreigners out. Like, I mean, that's terrifying. Even if you're, you know, if you're like, you know, UK first, England first, let's not have any illegal immigration. Even if you feel that way, this is not the right approach. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, the sun will never set on the British Empire. Well, it's fucking set completely at this point, right?
Yeah.
Look, I think we
do. And that's the thing. That empire is like why you have so many people there, right? I mean, the Japanese didn't bring back a bunch of people when they were trying to empire build, you know? And the ones they brought back, they have problems with, the Koreans.
Right. Yeah, this is like the French, right? The French, all of these empires and all of these countries like Africa and whatnot could come to France. I think we need to take this to the level of state for a moment. The British state is a basket case. Mm-hmm. It's massively hated by its own population. And from the standpoint of economics, Britain is nearly a third world country. Put it in context. So you have what used to be an empire that is no longer an empire, that can barely deal with its own affairs, and yet is still agitating for war and everything else. Meaning they have misplayed their hand. And the public itself is suffering as a result of the failures of the British government. Now, I say that to say that that stuff echoes out, it ripples out to the rest of the society. What about jobs? What about employment? What about the earnings? What about the housing, et cetera? And when those things are not well, people start looking for reasons for why those things are not well, and immigrants immediately come up as part of the reasons. I guess I'm pointing and saying that, yeah, these guys are roaming around the countryside trying to throw people out of the country, which is, as you point out, terrifying. But I wonder if the economy was roaring, would these people be doing that? And I come to the conclusion of probably no. They probably wouldn't care one way or the other. It may be intellectual, whereas now it's become a material reality. So yeah, this is terrifying. But I place blame squarely on the leadership of the country itself. These guys are still with going to war with Russia in 2030. They're not caring about the immigration and stuff like that that's taking place from the economic devastation that Britain is suffering through. So,
Felice Fab, thanks for the buck. Purpose of he says, the purpose of banning social media for under 16s is actually about destroying online anonymity for adults, since proof of a majority age is needed to access social media. Right, and you'd have to show your ID. That's right. That's Sean Pat, thanks for the $2. We're talking about the British colony on the island of Ireland, right? That is correct. If you so, will the aliens be anti-Semitic? Thanks for the book.
I hope not.
that would be bad.
Anti-Semitic, yes. Anti-Semitic, hopefully not. No.
Hopefully not, indeed. So we'll continue to watch that story. I mean, obviously, these riots tend to run their course. The government will send in troops and the equivalent of National Guardsmen, and they'll quash these people. I mean, that is what's going to happen, and neighborhoods are going to be destroyed. But it's quite the look. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. TMI show coming up right now in about a minute here at 10 o'clock Eastern. I'm not going to be there, but Robbie in Manila will be there with a lighter take on the news. Just another reminder, DMC America podcast is rescheduled tentatively from 11 a.m. today to 11 a.m. tomorrow. Please tune into Deprogram. We will be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Looking forward to that. JT, as always, thank you so much for doing this with me, and we will talk to you guys later.